Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rick Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rick van Niekerk, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors and business leaders about their investment journeys and their personal investment decisions. We look at their first investments and how their investment strategies have changed over the years. And we also take a look into their personal portfolios to see whether they practice what they preach. And the idea is to identify golden nuggets of wisdom to assist young amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Kenny Rapson. He's the CEO of Discovery Invest, and he has been at Discovery for 25 years. He was the co-founder of Discovery Life, and he became the CEO of Discovery Invest in 2015. So he has been doing it for quite a while, and he is an actuary, so he has the academic skills to boot. Kenny, thank you so much for your time today. It has been a journey, but first, tell us a bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and did you dream about a career in the investment world when you were young?
Rick, thanks for the time, and it's very exciting to be with you. The truth is, you know, we grew up, I think, in a financial family. My dad was a chartered accountant, a partner at one of the big accounting firms, and he was very involved with listing companies for clients of his and merging companies and that. So we kind of heard a lot about it at the time. And as kids, we all actually had little share portfolios. Our pocket money or birthday money or whatever would go into a share portfolio. In those days, we had a fairly contact as a stockbroker. They were called Frankel Pollock was the company name in those days, huge stockbroker. And we all had like little portfolios. And I guess the amounts obviously weren't significant, but it was a lot of fun and kind of a lot of talking around in the family, which was always exciting, and watching shares go up and then go down and all of that. It was challenging, but fun.
How did you pick the shares you invested in that portfolio?
You know, we listened to my dad a lot, I mean, and followed him. He was running a portfolio for himself and for like a family trust. I started out, the first share that I picked was a share called Trencor. Trencor was in tank containers and very much a Rand hedge share, and they not cope with demand. I mean, their share price was just going through the roof. And I think, you know, as a young investor, when you see a little bit of success, you get kind of more of that bug to continue investing. And I kind of just got that bug and was starting to then sell some of the shares and reinvest in other shares to start building the kind of breadth of the portfolio. And it was very exciting. I think in those days, things were simpler. Shares were very much South African based. So, you know, they didn't typically have a huge amount of offshore earnings, which complicates a lot of shares. The legislation was a lot simpler. There wasn't capital gains taxes and things like that. So the world was a lot simpler and a lot easier, I think, to have the fund. But I think really that interest just continued growing throughout school into high school. You know, a lot of the school kids get involved in the JSE, the Stock Exchange Challenge, which, you know, I did at the time. And I think just really my academic background from a maths point of view, you know, at school, if you're good at maths, they tell you to become an actuary. So I did that without really knowing exactly what I was getting into at the time. Having said that, I mean, it's been the most rewarding and remarkable career. And just continued from then, you know, going through my early days, I worked when I qualified at Liberty Life, was very involved in investments and running portfolios. When I came across to Discovery, we didn't actually have an investment company in those days. We only started it in 2007. And it just like was a natural fit for me. You know, I liked investments and it was like a natural thing for me to be involved in sort of startup. with all the other founder members in Discovery. It's been incredibly exciting.
Yeah, the whole Discovery story is actually inspirational. It's wonderful tale of entrepreneurship and innovation. But I want to go back to that portfolio you had at school, because not many people are exposed to the investment world to that extent, and to get some, you know, skin in the game, because that changes your perceptions significantly. How did you approach the selection of shares you wanted to invest in, you know, in addition to what your father told you or advice you got from him?
We used to actually have like a lot of our conversations were around that I'd have with my dad. You know, it was often around a particular share. What did he think of this? What did he think of that? We used to watch the newspaper every day and see, you know, the shares and what was reaching new highs, and, you know, kind of invest just, I think, through discussion and speaking to our stockbroker. I think she was the first lady stockbroker on the JSE. And she used to call us often and say, what about this? What about that idea? And we used to follow it. And she was great. So we learned a fortune. We used to have discussions with her. I think that's really kind of how it just happened over time. I think, of course, today it's a lot more complex. I think today, firstly, to have a private portfolio with any stockbroker, they want much bigger amounts of money. So I think it's not so practical to do that with a stockbroker advising you. And I think I've probably turned the corner thinking the right place for young people to get invested is more through unit trusts than share portfolios. The share portfolios are, you know, shares are much more complicated than they used to be. There's just so much going on globally, changes to taxation treatment, changes in law which affect different companies. For a youngster to really know what's going on without attending sort of analyst meetings and things like that, I think is very difficult. Whereas, like, you know, a unit trust portfolio, you've got an asset manager who's doing that 24/7 and they're kind of running it for you and making those choices. It's more tax efficient. They take smaller amounts of money. It's so liquid, easy to get in and out of it whenever you want. So I think that's probably the guidance I would be giving to a young investor.
You were young during the 1990s, one of the roaring periods in South Africa's history. We saw many, many listings. We saw the dot-com bubble form, and you could invest in virtually anything and you would have made money during that period. Were you active during that period? And what lessons did you learn when that bubble burst?
I think like the one lesson that I learned is not to get emotionally tied to any particular share. And I did that at the time. I remember actually buying the Didata share. It was like R5 a share, something like that. And it went through the roof. It went over R70 a share. And I kind of like had the thing, no, it'll come right. Don't worry, whatever. Eventually, when I got out at under the price that I paid for the share. And I think that kind of like emotional, you know, when you kind of get tied up with one of the darlings of the stock exchange, it's a bit of an emotional hold. And you don't necessarily just follow objectivity and say, listen, things at the moment aren't working out there for whatever reason. It's time to actually move the money elsewhere. So I think that was certainly one lesson, getting emotionally tied to a particular share and also believing that, you know, a bit of a naive belief, nothing will go wrong. And of course, every company has its challenges, you know. So I think it is trickier. And I think the opportunities, by the way, for youngsters today are just so much bigger, also globally. You know, in those days, it was hard to invest or get exposure to any global shares. Now, you know, you can get exposure to any share you want anywhere in the world. And I think that's a great opportunity for, you know, certainly those shares that are not available on our market, you know. So we've got some great companies in South Africa, but if you want exposure to certain sectors, you know, you want to be in electric vehicles or you want to be in chip makers or something like that, you can't actually get access to that on our stock exchange. So I think having a much more global view is the right way forward. And I think it's also from a rand hedging point of view is also an important strategy.
And you earlier said that you think the best way for young investors to have exposure to the market is through unit trusts. But, you know, there are, in the South African market at least, I think it's about 280 listed entities, and I think there are more than 3,000 unit trusts available. So how would you go about selecting the best unit trust for your personal circumstances?
So I think that's a tricky question. I mean, I think the way people would generally look at it is the track record of a particular asset manager. You know, every asset manager is going to go through some ups and downs. What one wants to know is that over the long term, they've done a great job for their clients. And, you know, typically, if you look at every unit trust has what we call a fund fact sheet, which is on the website of the unit trust companies, and you can see the track record. How's it performed over 1 year, 3 year, 5 year periods, et cetera? You know, who's the fund manager? Is it one of the well-known names in the industry with a track record? And I think that is incredibly important. You know, historical performance, while it isn't a guide to future performance at all, I do believe like time in the game, track record, people have been there for a long time and know all the various companies they're researching. I think, you know, companies that are more global, you know, that have a broader offering globally, I think those are the companies to look at. You know, certainly all the big names in the unit trust industry, I think one won't go that wrong with them. But there's a lot of information on the website of every one of those companies. And if you're buying sort of equities, you want to know that they are growing, giving you a good real return above inflation, you know, several percent above inflation because of the risk you're taking. And otherwise, you could leave your money in the bank. If you're going to take risk on stock markets, you've got to be able to get a good return well in excess of what you'd earn in the bank. And therefore, you've got to look at the track record and the stability, I think, of those track records. You know, often certain funds are very volatile. And I think I wouldn't encourage that type of investing for the youngster, sort of these very deep value funds, which get very lumpy returns. It can be very high in 1 year, but then you've got to have the stomach for the next year when it's low. I think you want the stability of growth funds with good global exposure. I would say youngsters should not invest in funds that haven't got a high level of offshore exposure at the same time.
Risk is also something that you don't intuitively understand when you are young. And sometimes you make mistakes or you take risks that are not aligned with your personal profile. How do you think young people should consider risk? And do you think people, especially young people, make mistakes when they invest without taking into account the risk profile of that investment?
Look, risk is incredibly important. I mean, obviously, if you're investing in equities, you are taking risk, which is not just risk around a particular company's performance. You're taking risk around global economy, recessions, all things like that, you know, which are things that are hard to factor in to the equation. But I think in particular, when you're looking at young people, you know, they've got to have a good long time horizon. And, you know, over time, you'll get the returns that you're expecting. But I think if you're looking to do short term investing, then you've got to really manage your risk to low levels. And there, you know, for the short term, people should consider much lower risk investments and more fixed interest income type of investments. You know, for me, if you're buying equities or buying equity unit trusts, you've got to be in there for a minimum of a 3 to 5, 7 year term. That's what I would advise. I think you can have too short term an approach and then you'll sell something potentially at the wrong time. And you've also got to do your research and make sure you're not buying something when it's already shot the lights out. You know, that happens very often. People will buy something when they've heard all the news about it, the share's gone up a huge amount over the last couple of months, and then they want to enter that share without knowing, is there still a lot more upside in it or not? So I do think risk's important, and that's why I do believe like the unit trust industry, the place to, you know, they're managing the risk for you. And today the world is just so complicated, I don't believe an individual can manage that risk that easily on their own. You know, you're not just managing a particular company. You're managing what's happening in economies. If you just think over the last 2 years, we've seen unprecedented inflation globally, interest rates very high to try to bring inflation down. All of those things just have dramatic impacts on different types of industries and companies. And for an individual who's not really on top of that, to manage their own portfolio and choose their own shares is incredibly difficult.
I think that's a clear message, and I think it's excellent advice. Let's talk about your personal investment portfolio. How do you approach it? And if you can reveal what is in it at the moment.
So I'm kind of one of those trading junkies. I kind of spend a lot of time trading share portfolios myself. And the truth is, I have a lot more sort of offshore exposure than JSE exposure. And I think the reason for that is the JSE, you know, over the last two decades has actually shrunk dramatically in size and opportunity. You know, there are less than half the number of counters on the JSE than there were 20 years ago. So the opportunities that have opened up globally are just incredibly exciting in the world of tech and electric vehicles and healthcare, etc. So I think they're great opportunities, and I trade a lot myself. But having said that, I do watch like all the news daily, CNBC, getting all like messages on my phone all day of kind of what's happening on markets. But then I also spread my investments. I have, you know, investments in the unit trust space, both locally and offshore. I've invested in some private equity investments as well. So I think like a bit of a diversified approach. I mean, I think that is probably one of the key messages, to be diversified. You know, it's no good having, you know, people have done very well. In fact, I have a colleague of mine who's been investing in Apple shares for a long period of time. And he's actually done incredibly well, to the extent that as a proportion of his total assets, it's huge. But the downside for him is just massive. If something goes wrong in that one company, he is in big trouble. So I think, like, you know, to have a diversified portfolio of whatever you've got, property, shares, fixed income, hedge funds, whatever, it should be diversified that you don't cry too much if something is a bit pear-shaped can happen. And so not having all your eggs in one basket is crucial. And I think that's probably been key to what I've done over the last decade.
Then lastly, two questions, and I always get a chuckle. What has been your worst investment you have made in your life?
Well, it's a good question, because I've made quite a few investments that have gone pear-shaped. I think probably the worst was an investment that I took out only a couple of years ago. It was an offshore investment in a property company where they were developing property in the UK. The returns that they were illustrating, base case returns, were in excess of 12% per annum in pounds. But in fact, because of COVID, being unable to rent their properties, etc., the investment pretty much carries a value close to zero. So I think I've seen the most extreme case of an investment being basically at a value of naught. Probably not right to mention the company's name. But I'd say that's, you know, the important message to all young investors. You're going to have some successes, but you are going to have some failures. You've got to kind of just be comfortable and try and make sure you're getting it right, you know, 80% of the time. Then you'll do nicely.
Gee, I think 80% of the calls to go your way, I think that's a very high percentage. But let's move on. What do you regard as your best investment ever?
You know, I think my best investments have been the tech investments. You know, the tech shares that I've bought. If I just take Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, those have been the best performers by a mile. You know, those have all given kind of returns in the hundreds of percents. Nvidia over the last 18 months. So, you know, I think the tech sector has probably rewarded me the most. And I follow that very closely. Tech and healthcare shares globally, following a lot of that very closely. Shares like Google, all of those tech names, I think have been my most successful space to be. But having said that, I've mentioned, I have had some downsides as well. So it kind of takes a bit of that shine, but not that much, luckily.
Kenny, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for sharing your insights with us.
It's a pleasure, and thanks so much for the interview.
That was Kenny Rapson. He's the CEO of Discovery Invest.
Show me the money. That was the Money Web, the A Better Investor podcast with Rake Van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the Money Web podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. Money Web, your trusted source for business and investment insights.